about course procedures. Professor Hall, you have anything you need to say to them?
Not a word, not a thing.
So, for the syllabus today, you are supposed to continue reading Snow Crash, and for Thursday, you need to have finished Snow Crash. So, that will enable us to have a discussion of the full book on Thursday, which I think will be a lot of fun. It's always better when you don't have to say, well, I can't give away this, but... I'm pleased that we're having this pause here. There it is. We need to come up with a blog topic. Those of you that have not sent your draft of the paper to Oak, to me and Oak, please do so right now. Remember to title it the way I asked you to. Most of you all succeeded on the last paper, but about three still failed to title it correctly. So make sure it's titled last name, first name, paper 2-draft. And then Professor Hall and I will rack our brains for a really good blog topic.
Should we skip the blog topic this time since they have the final draft due on Monday?
Oh gosh, you're such a soft.
I am very soft. So.
Such a softy. And right here when we've got 2,000 people a day hitting our blog, you want to let them
need to absorb.
They need to absorb. So maybe they'll like that more.
I see. Okay, we can skip it.
We're going to skip it, guys.
What if we all just put a blog up anyway?
And if you put a blog up anyway, be sure that it has something that will draw attention.
Something lusty and provocative, right? Yes, of course.
To our website. So, I've graded almost all the papers. There's one or two that I still haven't gotten back. But I presume you've seen my remarks on those of you that have received them back.
How did you get them back?
Same way you sent them to me.
Digital Dropbox. And like I open it up and it'll have comments and stuff?
Correct. And the comments will be in Word with using the review feature, the very one you're going to be using in class today to edit your partner's second paper. To make sure you can see them, just be sure to go to track changes and make sure that's clicked. So you'll get two kinds of comments on your first paper: my editorial changes, deletions, etc., and my written comments in the margin. So focus on those. Let's talk today about a principle in paper writing, this kind of paper writing. Let's talk in general about question of what constitutes a good argument and what constitutes evidence for an argument. We won't spend too much time in this discussion, but I ask you to look up from your screens and think with us together about types of arguments. Has anyone studied rhetoric, argumentative rhetoric in a class? You have?
I had to read Aristotle's
Rhetorics, and did he have good suggestions for types of arguments?
Well, his main points were what he called logos, ethos, and pathos, which is an appeal to logic, reason, or emotion. And those are his three main arguments.
Excellent. Logic, reason,
emotion, and ethics.
And ethics, so what would be an appeal to one of those, if you can recall? Yeah, just any of the three. How would you make a logical as opposed to an emotional, as opposed to an ethical case?
Well, first you have to understand your audience in order to come to
Great.
And every audience is going to be different. For example, if you're arguing a paper or a point in the United States, you're not going to use the same appeal to ethics or emotion as you might in, say,
somewhere
else. Another country.
Another country with another set of morals, values, cultural presuppositions. Great. I mean, that's a crucial point about making an argument, is consider your audience. How do you know your audience? Initially, papers are sort of the easiest because you know the teacher you're writing for. So you know how you're always asking yourself, well, what is the teacher looking for? That kind of comment is an effort to assess your audience. Let's talk about not different types of arguments, like a logical argument versus a emotional argument or an argument involving morals. Instead of those as different types of papers, how would you find ways to use each of them in the same paper?
Seems like a very open-ended question.
It is. So yeah, give me your reflections.
Depends on the topic.
What?
Depends on the topic and what you're trying to prove. Because sometimes an emotional argument serves better than one of the other types.
Yeah. Does an emotion? Could you ever write a paper for a university class that was entirely relied on emotional arguments?
No.
I don't think
you
so.
Nothing to back it up.
Yeah, nothing to back it up. Exactly.
Right.
But could you? Need you exclude emotional arguments entirely, particularly not from courses that ask for that kind of response or give you prompts like drawing on your personal experience or, say, drawing on your reaction to the literary work? Can you make arguments that are entirely moral arguments in a class?
Because
unless it's a class like ethics.
Unless it's a class on ethics, I still don't think they'd let you do it. If by moral argument you meant these are my moral views and that's why I take this position, they wouldn't want you to give reasons, i.e. logical reasons, and for your moral views, not just say that's what it is. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Go on.
I just like the logic. It would be the foundation of your argument. And then the morals and ethically and emotionally would be the swaying point, I guess, to kind of butter up your language and make your argument that much stronger.
I think that's well said.
Butter up.
Butter up your argument. How many times have you heard a teacher say, you know, I don't care what your personal belief is, I want you to argue the opposite side, or if you're arguing for a religious principle or some real controversial topic, you know, I want you to set aside your beliefs and make a case for it, or if you're going to include your, you know, that's a high school teacher or a college teacher trying to tell you that you have to include reasons inside of your paper. The logical part of your paper, when you say, I want a thesis, I want you to argue for or against argue a thesis, take a position and argue for it. The way you can tell the logical power of a paper is what? How can you tell if a paper is logical? An argument is logical. That's it. It's a relationship between your claims and the evidence that you put on the page. That is the key feature. You know, it's not some complicated thing about syllogism or anything of that nature. It's always a relationship between your arguments and the evidence you provide for them. So let's shift to a quick discussion about evidence. What counts as evidence in a paper? But, you know, because I use these abstractions, I say, be sure to use good evidence. So what the heck did I mean? In your opinion.
Quotation.
Okay, let's start with a quotation. How would a quotation be a piece of evidence in support of an argument you're making?
As far as using it, you would want to make a statement.
intended for the quotation, and then
as proof that, or that the statement
no, and then
true.
Analyze the quotation
right.
afterwards.
That's right.
Go through.
So the weakest way to use quotation as evidence is to say, Stevenson defines snow crash as your screen going all fuzzy. Then, quote, Stevenson, snow crashes when your screen goes all fuzzy. Now, that is, it is evidence, but it will get you points taken off because it's self-evident. So what is the relation, what did you mean when you say analyze the quote that is used to support the position? I mean, if the quote supports the position too obviously, it's redundant. You see what I mean? So what kind of quote do you put in a paper? A couple of you put massive passages of quotation in your paper, and then no analysis. You just went on to the next topic, as though the quote spoke for itself. Why is that not effective? I know this is very hard to talk about in the abstract, but I think maybe we can get a principle or two out. Yeah.
Quotes generally mean or explain more than they say literally. Like you need to.
Great.
You need to really
great. So the most effective form of evidence is evidence that will support your point, but not self-evidently. It takes some mental labor on your part, subsequent to plopping the quote down on the page, to draw out all the ways in which it supports. You had a comment, is it? Is
no,
it?
That was just okay. Based.
Let me give you another tip. A quote that could be seen not to support your point, or a quote that has a feature that somewhat contradicts, or that could call into question some aspect of your argument, is actually the best kind of quote if you then analyze it and dispel that doubt that it raises. So a quote that calls into question a feature of your argument, but then you can show how, in spite of that, it still supports your argument. You're being original. You're showing your intellectual dexterity. In a paper, a reason a teacher assigns a paper is not so you can parrot back what's been said in class. That's called a test. A paper is so you can demonstrate your own reactions, your own original thinking, your own mental dexterity. And I know you know that, but I'm just trying to put into words what that really is. Well, one thing it really is, one of the best things it is taking something that's not self-evident and showing it how, in spite of that, it still supports your point. Are there other kinds of evidence besides a quotation?
Mm-hmm. Historical reference.
Yeah? Tell me how that would work. You're absolutely right, so tell me more about it.
Well, if you're going to draw a parallel between something that happens in the book and that happens in your life, then you're going to want evidence to back it up in the form of correct.
Okay, what he's really talking about, if I may generalize from your specific point to a slightly larger abstraction, he's talking about analogy, argument through analogy. In this case, you mentioned a historical analogy or a parallel. Is that a good kind of argument or a bad kind of argument?
Good for the essay we wrote.
Pardon me?
Good for the essay about the future.
I really just can't.
It's good for the essay about the future, specifically.
Yeah.
You have to draw a lot of parallels.
Or about the present, sure.
Yeah.
Would. Sure.
I was referring to the one that we had assigned.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
I just have a question. What if you did something like that, but it's not just something that's happened, it's just something that is set up that could potentially happen.
Perfect. A hypothetical. That's a third kind of evidence. A hypothetical situation is yet another kind of argument. I guess that's not an evidence, but it is a supporting structure for an argument. You give a hypothetical case that you can then explore. So each of those, you know, the quotation, analysis of quotation, the analogical argument, and the hypothetical argument are classic forms, and every one of them has uses and abuses. If you only have analogies in your paper, you could be criticized for that. People could say, yeah, but you know, you rely entirely on analogy and you give us no concrete instance. So one way that you avoid that is that you include analogy as only one of your ways for making your point. Though there's no hard and fast rule for writing papers, so every once in a while you'll see a tour de force. You particularly see these in editorial writing or op-ed features. Tour de force is where the entire piece is just this total analogy or this total hypothetical. Sometimes they don't even mention what they're really talking about. And that's really a fancy form of writing that is more, is such a high level of kind of performative display in that writing that it's really more suited for editorial feature pages than for hardcore argumentative essays. So if you're going to use a hypothetical or you're going to use an analogy, often it's safest to make that be only one of the tools you rely on to support your argument. Any others? And we'll, I think I've about exhausted the ones I can think of. I've got one more that I can think of. Dan, you just stretch in, or you've got another inspiration? Anything that anybody can think of?
Which one do we get so far?
We got
the logos.
Quotation? Yeah. Oh no. All of these are ways to support your logos, support your reasons. And the analogy can have pathos in it. The hypothetical can have pathos in it. The analysis of a quotation generally has pure interpretive subtlety. It's much more intellectual. So, but in analogies, are there just plain examples? When a teacher says be specific, use specific examples. Obviously an analogy is like an example, but a specific example is making a generalization and then naming actual examples of it. So it's quite the same thing as an analogy. And it's definitely not the same thing as a hypothetical. And I think that is the fourth major kind of evidence that you can include in a paper, and probably the most common kind that you need to include throughout your paper, is never rest at the level of abstraction or generalization, but always try and move it into. Why are specific examples so much better than abstractions? It's so obvious.
Because they're concrete.
They're concrete, they're vivid, they make your paper come alive. That's all I have to say.
How about, specifically the case of a book, tracing a metaphor or like a theme?
Yeah, that's great. Go ahead. Matt, you had a reaction to that. What?
Isn't that just kind of using specific examples again, though?
Well, actually,
kind of subcategory?
I would think of it as combining specific examples with analysis, except it can't be done with either one alone. It's like if you're identifying a specific thread of word usage or term usage in a book, then you can't get that just from analyzing a single quotation. But nor can you get that just from citing every example.
Packer. Nicely said. I like that. I think of trace a metaphor or a theme through it as a type of paper. And you're exactly right in that it calls for two kinds of evidence, the examples and the analysis of the passage. And the trace a theme paper is the hardest paper, I believe, to have a good thesis about. Because if you're just, and several of you all did good jobs of that with tracing the river or the sword in your paper. I think that we've had several, I read several of those. And those are hard papers to write because what's your thesis? If your thesis is just merely swords are important in The Lord of the Rings, well, that's not much of a, and then you go, here's a sword, and then you analyze it. Here's another sword, and you analyze it. That's not an argument, even though it is a trace the theme paper. So you've got to say, swords may seem to be always violent, but in fact, they're a sign of kingship, which has which happens to be the thesis that somebody wrote about here in class and was well done, a sign of kingship which has dimensions other or more, complex than simply violence. And so there was actually an argument to be made about the non-violent symbolic character of swords in the book, and that's a non-self-evident thesis. And there were similar good ones about rivers. Any other thoughts or questions about arguments and evidence? Well, what I want you to do then, when you go through and read and comment on on one another's paper, is I want you to locate particular uses of evidence and either compliment or criticize or request more evidence. What's the relationship between the evidence and the argument? Does it need more evidence at this place? If you could suggest new evidence, if you could suggest analogies, remember again, I want you to go ahead and edit the paper, do your own kinds of writing on it, become a co-writer of this person's paper. Only in this class is that not cheating, unless another teacher tells you so. But in this class, it's not, because I want your act of editing to be a learning experience for you. So I want you to grow as a writer by helping someone else. So edit, write your own comments, write your own passages, but in particular, be sure to find places where evidence is effectively used, complement it. Using the comment feature in Word, not the typing into the text feature. Comment on it and call for more in places that you see it. Okay, thank you. Go. Got to work on one.